Winter Wrong, a Pride and Prejudice novella. Chapter 4. Wearing a work dress and apron, Elizabeth continued to clean and tidy in her father's study, while Mr. Collins and Mr. Darcy pored over the accounts. She had a pile of books that she planned to take to her bedroom as favorites enjoyed by her and her father. Only a few titles nearly caused her to tear up before she remembered her company and placed her emotions on better regulations. "This ledger is most perplexing. I see here numerous years of profitable returns, and yet," Mr. Darcy continually turned pages back and forth, following the carefully columned sums in Mr. Bennet's steady hand. "According to neighbors, my predecessor spent more time in his library than the fields. It's a well-established fact that sloth will lead many a man astray with—" Mr. Collins continued to sermonize the gossip he had already heard from the local townfolk upon inheriting Longbourn. Dusting off her hands, Elizabeth stood up from where she had been working on the lowest shelves. "Perhaps you should ask a person more intimate with the workings of Longbourn than asking pointed questions to the pages of a ledger that cannot answer back." She raised one eyebrow in a perfect arch, and both men stared at her. "Ah, you mean the steward? A Mr. Warren? Yes, that's an excellent idea. Where can we find him, Collins?" Mr. Collins' face turned red, and he blustered to answer that Mr. Warren had very recently resigned his post to take a position in London. Elizabeth crossed her arms in front of her, but held her tongue about the true story of how Mr. Collins had irrevocably offended Warren's abilities and attempted to demote him for a candidate put forward by his mysterious patroness, Mr. Darcy's aunt. "Pardon me, but I wasn't suggesting Mr. Warren. I was suggesting you ask me." The blank looks shared between Mr. Darcy and Mr. Collins said it all, but only Mr. Collins began to laugh. "Cousin, your jests occasionally go too far. You cannot expect that a great man such as Mr. Darcy would possibly take advice from a woman." "Where you may not have been educated in the arts of collecting rents and crop rotation, I can assure you I have. My father never held any education back from any of his daughters who truly desired to learn. I can speak and read French, as well as Latin, and every decision for this estate has been shared with me for the last 3 years." Elizabeth locked eyes with Mr. Darcy and softened her expression of anger to one of pain. Her fine eyes were wide and begged for his assistance. Clearing his throat, Mr. Darcy looked to the ledger. "Miss Elizabeth, how many fields did your father leave fallow last season?"
3.
"In addition, we urged Mr. Boggins to break up his pasture. His wheat yields were the highest last year." Though impressed with her information, Mr. Darcy made no further remark. Darcy still was not convinced that she hadn't simply listened as her father made decisions. He had not known Mr. Bennet very long, but he still found it surprising that he would consult with a daughter in such matters. Again, assuming Mr. Bennet made such decisions at all, and it was not the missing steward's directions that ran the estate. "Can you account for these large sums from the rents and crop sales that disappear off the ledger? See here, last season alone nearly £400 are subtracted from the next quarter's starting balance. Yet the household accounts do not account for any largesse." Mr. Darcy motioned towards the other ledger book, primarily kept by her mother, sitting closed on the desk. Smoothing her apron, Elizabeth hung her head. She had always checked her father's math at the end of the season, but hadn't thought to question money leaving the estate accounts.
"I cannot."
"Was your father a card player, Miss Elizabeth?
Was he fond of drink?"
Mr. Collins interceded as he spied the decanter across the room, thinking to himself that he could surely use a drink. Elizabeth glared at her cousin and frowned.
"No more than any other gentleman. He was not a drunk, if that is what you're insinuating."
"Then that leaves—" Mr. Darcy immediately began to cough. "Mr. Collins, I do not believe we need to imagine every explanation for large expenditures of the recently deceased Mr. Bennet." His eyes roamed over the shelves around him. No matter the cause for the money spent, it did not change the fact that Mr. Collins would have very little capital to maintain the estate and the Bennet family in the style they were accustomed to living. Mr. Collins' inexperience at estate management only made success on such paltry funds more unlikely. Darcy rubbed his face and wistfully reconsidered the room around him, filled with shelves from floor to ceiling and brimming with books. Inheriting an estate in disrepair or grieved from years of mismanagement is nothing new. You shall just have to accede to the plans other heirs have done before you and sell some of the assets. Mr. Collins' mouth opened immediately
as did Elizabeth's, in protest. But Mr. Darcy held up his hands. "I'm not suggesting you sell land, Mr. Collins, but take this room, for instance. A number of these books are quite valuable and could help you raise a few hundred pounds to replenish the estate's savings." Tears welled in Elizabeth's eyes, and she no longer cared if the men in the room dismissed her as an emotional female. "You would sell my father's books?" She ignored Mr. Collins entirely and captured Mr. Darcy's attention again. The man's face was unreadable as he glared back, and she defiantly wiped her eyes despite his disapproval. "Sadly, cousin, these are no longer your father's books, as he has moved on to another world beyond our understanding. As heir, the books are now in my possession, and I must set aside sentimental emotions for the best future of our family." Without another word, Elizabeth seized the pile of books she had set aside and stood at the door. "Fine, sell them all, but not these. These are mine." Leaving the room to fly up the stairs, Elizabeth placed the books in her personal trunk and locked the lid. Sliding the key into her pocket, she noticed that a thin, green ribbon had fluttered to the floor and now lay at her feet. "Oh, Papa," she sobbed as she delicately lifted the ribbon. It was one of the first bookmarks she had used as a young girl. Collapsing to the floor of her bedroom, she held the ribbon gingerly in her fingertips, and replaying the awfulness in the study below, she fashioned a sad little bow with frayed edges. Clutching her treasure, she flicked her slippers off and put on her sturdier walking boots. As she donned her gray cloak from the hall, she could hear Mr. Darcy. Collins and Mr. Darcy discussing individual books and their worth. "Oh ho, where are you off to, missy? Jane has just had a message that Mr. Bingley shall join us for dinner, and I'm off now to extend the invitation to Mr. Darcy." Elizabeth whirled around to see her mother in full widow regalia and remained silent. Her red-rimmed eyes were all her mother needed to shoo her least favorite daughter out of the house while she distracted the men in the study. The weeds of summer lay down in brown crisps as Elizabeth trudged through the very fields she had been quizzed upon. She muttered curses and vexes against Mr. Collins and Mr. Darcy as she cried for her own powerlessness. Her father was gone, and with him, her only ally in this world.
Within the half hour, Elizabeth arrived at her destination, and she weaved her way through generations of previous Longbourn residents in the church's cemetery, before she came upon the freshly disturbed earth of her father's resting place. Dropping to her knees, she bowed her head and uttered the Lord's Prayer before purging her heart of all of the anger and mean-spirited thoughts she felt pent up inside. As the golds and rusts of autumn rustled in the branches around her, she felt her prayers and complaints had been rendered to the Lord's feet, and she prayed once more for her father's forgiveness, that she could not save but a fraction of his most prized possessions. With fresh tears threatening to spill at the edges of her eyes, she very gingerly dug a small hole near the simple wooden cross awaiting a more permanent headstone, marking where her father's head lay. Placing the ribbon bow she had made earlier into the hole, Elizabeth couldn't hold back her emotions as she covered it and openly sobbed that she had nothing more substantial to place in her father's memory. It was in this condition that a young soldier in regimentals, speaking with the local vicar, approached Elizabeth, interrupting her uncontrollable keening. "Elizabeth, my child." Parson Willoughby reached out his infirm hands to the crying woman he had baptized as an infant. "How is your family?" Elizabeth wiped her eyes and accepted the vicar's well wishes. "Mama is strong, and my sisters manage. Pardon me, but may I be of some assistance in helping you home?" Elizabeth blinked a few times and then looked back at the vicar, who nodded his approval. "Lieutenant George Wickham, madam, at your service," the man said with a flourished bow and a charming smile. Elizabeth curtsied and gave her name. Surely a soldier spending his off hours at a church could mean her no harm. Yet her curious nature still asked of him why he was there. "Oh, I was meant for the church, once upon a time. My godfather had sent me to university for that very purpose. And now that I'm a soldier, I still find such a sense of calm in the pews that I visit the local church at each of our stations." The two walked along, and Elizabeth asked the fine lieutenant more questions to measure the mettle of the man, and his answers were all that a man of the cloth should be. So finally, she asked the question Wickham was waiting most anxiously to hear. "You seem so suited for the church. However did you become a soldier?" When the living came available on my godfather's great estate, the new heir denied me the inheritance, though he was aware of his father's express wishes. How awful! Could you not seek remedy from the law? How could a loyal son be so dishonorable to the wishes of his father? Lieutenant Wickham paused and looked to the road ahead of them. He had an idea it would not take much longer to escort this young woman home. Therefore, he shortened his well-practiced tale of woe. Sadly, Miss Bennet, the relief of the court is too high a price for a pauper such as myself, and the understanding was never directly written out. Old Mr. Darcy never thought there would be a need since his son and I attended Oxford together. Elizabeth gasped at the name. It couldn't be, could it? Had Mr. Darcy also burdened this poor man with his high and haughty ways by making yet another's will and bequest nothing more than a business transaction? I apologize for being so inquisitive, but I noticed you reacted to my mention of the Darcy name. Pray, are you acquainted? I am sad to inform you, sir, that a Mr. Fitzwilliam Darcy resides in my father's study as we speak, to assist my cousin in determining the value of my father's books so they may be sold. Elizabeth's voice wavered mid-sentence, but she spat the last word out as if it was the most vile resident of the English language. Mr. Wickham stopped their progress to take Miss Elizabeth's hand and cupped it with his own. I am most heartily ashamed of how my childhood friend has hurt your family. I had hopes that only I was to be pained and hindered by his prejudice. He squeezed her hand and bowed low over it, but did not move so forward as to bestow a kiss. Slightly cheered in her heart that another could understand her misery, Elizabeth thanked Mr. Wickham as they reached the edge of her home's garden and invited him in to meet the rest of her family. She explained that she was but one of five daughters, and the name Miss Bennet was reserved for her elder sister, Jane. There is no other place I should rather go at this very moment, Miss Elizabeth, than to spend another quiet half-hour's conversation with your lovely company. Alas, I have been away from my regiment for too long, and must double time back for evening muster. I hope we shall see each other again soon. And with another low bow, Mr. Wickham was gone back towards Meryton, where the militia was quartered for the winter, and Elizabeth was forced to face a dinner with both her cousin and Mr. Darcy in attendance. Deciding she would not succumb to the frail position Mr. Collins and others may insinuate she be in, she resolved to plead a headache and take her meal in her room. Since her appearance was still wild and her eyes hopelessly red, her mother happily agreed for Elizabeth to remain upstairs for the meal and socializing afterwards. Elizabeth spent the evening finishing the last of the death notices to family and friends. Despite many attempts, the missive to her aunt and uncle in London still had large, fat tear stains. But she had managed to write a clear direction to Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner of Gracechurch Street.